Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And a very good morning to you on this last June Saturday. Can you believe
that?
It is.
No, June ends on Monday.
Yes, it'll be all done. Then it's July 1st.
Yep.
And I know we have some Canadian listeners too, so happy Canada Day to you on Monday.
All right.
4th of July. Dr. Mixon, I know that you are going to do a little road trip. Are you going to be seeing any firecrackers where you're headed?
Probably have a better chance of seeing them from my deck than from this trip.
Okay.
I'm way up on a hill overlooking, you know, the lake and the city, and so I can usually see all the fireworks from my deck. But we are going to be kind of cruising down the Oregon coast, I think. So, you know, when it's 90 here, it'll be 62 where we are.
Okay, yes.
And the wind will be blowing, and we'll have our parkas up. But it's, you know, our daughter left at 2 o'clock this morning for South Korea. She's on a school trip, class trip for 12 days in Korea.
Oh, that's exciting.
And, so we're going to take this advantage with just the grown-ups.
Yay!
And do a little road trip. And we're just tooling along, and every tourist trap and giant ball of string we come across, we'll stop and do our touristy stuff.
Good.
And then about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, we'll start looking, where are we and where is a place we can sleep tonight?
That's kind of fun.
We don't have any plans. We'll just find a
just
hotel.
Go
hopefully something reasonably clean.
Good.
Don't want bed bugs.
No.
And, and just kind of take our time. Get up in the morning, do our morning workouts, have some breakfast, and, you know, mid-morning, get back in the car and tootle down the road again.
Very good.
So, yeah, it should be a very relaxing week.
Awesome. And when do you take off?
We're going to leave, I'm not even sure, this afternoon.
Okay, maybe this afternoon.
Or tomorrow morning.
Okay.
One or the other. This whole thing is kind of loosey-goosey.
And that's okay. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, Bending and I tend to have very physically active but poorly structured trips.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, we never go to resorts. We never sit in one spot. If we go international, we want to see the country, we want to see the cities.
The culture.
So we're usually up and going by sun up and, you know, walking and walking and walking.
Mm.
Well, walking when we're not running.
Yes. Yes, true. Okay, Dr. Mixon, a lot has happened this week, politically, medically. Perhaps you can, we'll just dive in and give us an update.
Okay, well, I guess I'll recap my one from the first show this morning.
Oh, good. And let me give the phone number, too, for folks to call in on our show. Yeah, here is the number. We are live in the studio. It's 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. All right. Give us a call and get in the queue.
Yes, because we would love to talk to you about your health problems or just the aging process and what we can do about it, because that is obviously our strong point. I try to keep my political commentary related to medical issues, and the medical issue here is age-related cognitive decline. We all slow with age. Some of us slow faster than others, but we all slow down. You know, we peak the speed of our brain processing in our late teens to very early 20s. And that's why those kids, because they process things very quickly and they're very flexible. And so they can handle multiple tasks in a short period of time, which is what multitasking really is. You do this and then quickly you shift to something else, and then you shift over a nine, and then you shift again. As we age, our brain is slowing down. We have more experience to draw on, bigger knowledge base to draw on, but we don't process as quickly. And so we start focusing on one thing at a time and doing it well before we switch to the next thing. But inevitably, men and women both, 100% of us, alter the degree at which we process things, and they get slower and slower and less precise as we get older. Now, some people are still functioning wonderfully into their mid-90s, and others by their late 60s are in real trouble. And so there's a spectrum. We don't all go down. We all go downhill, but we don't all go downhill at the same rate. And if we've had head trauma, concussions, blunt injuries, had neurosurgery, if you had subdural hematomas or little strokes or aneurysms, you tend to go down faster. And, you know, Mr. Biden has had two aneurysms, which provides significant trauma. And you would expect, just as a physician, leaving politics out of it, I would expect if I were his doctor that he would have cognitive issues at a younger age than other people. And, you know, at 80, he's done pretty well, all things considered. But I think Thursday night, we all saw very clearly that when under pressure and under stress, he can decompensate and he does not do well. I'm not upset with Joe. Joe has an illness. He's sick. He has a problem. And he deserves our sympathy and our concern. And the hope is he will accept some help. The next day, he appeared to be a different person, which tells me that he was heavily medicated by the next morning. Somebody boosted his epinephrine and probably a couple of other drugs, acetylcholine boosters. So that by the next day, he was functioning better. He should have had those 10 or 12 hours before the debate. But the fact is, a lot of people were shocked because they had believed MSNBC and CNN and the New York Times and so on when they swore that, you know, the pictures of him getting lost on stage and shaking hands with people that weren't there were somehow faked. Well, we now know those were not faked. Those were just Joe caught unaware. And I'm sorry about that. But the question, of course, is what do we do now? And, you know, I don't know if they're going to keep him on the ballot for the Democrats or are they going to remove him from and substitute someone else at this late date? He's got, you know, $150 million salted away for his campaign, and yet if they substitute for someone else, you can't just shift that money to the next guy. This was dedicated to him by law. And so they're going to have to start fresh with their fundraising pretty much. That's a real embarrassment at this late date and a real difficulty for marketing. Anyway, those are not my concerns. You know, my concern is primarily medicine. And on display, we saw what we have all seen in our parents and our grandparents. And unfortunately, eventually, each of us are going to be there. So, you know, let's not point fingers, let's not make fun. The reality is, for many of us, that is our potential future. So, you know, be kind, folks. We just saw us writ large. Anyway, I hate to spend too much time on it because, but it is a medical issue that impacts politics, and mm-hmm. if politics impacts medicine. I'm duty bound to give my opinion.
Yeah.
So, all right, but let's go for some calls, shall we?
Absolutely.
See if we can find some people that would like to talk to us about their problems and their lives, because the guys, you know, movers and shakers for the world, that's not us.
That's not
us. We're just ordinary folk.
Yes, we are. All right, and the phones are ringing and lighting up. Here is that number for you, too. It's 206-421-5757. We're headed over to beautiful Camino Island. Oh, Carol, I can only imagine your view today. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Thanks. Yeah, it's gorgeous. I took my dog for a walk and looked at Mount Baker right in my face.
Wow. Love it.
It is beautiful.
How can we help today?
Well, I have family history of Alzheimer's. My mom had it. My grandmother had it. And I have one of the APOE4 genes.
Okay. That was going to be my next question, so I'm glad you already know it. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm very active, and I'm, you know, conscious of having an active lifestyle and being proactive. And I've been taking ginkgo biloba, and I'm just wondering if that's the appropriate supplement to take to support my brain, or if I should be substituting that with something else.
Okay, well, great question. Well, first of all, let me make some comments that relate to some of the information you've given us. There are three human APO epsilon genes that we Homo sapiens get. There is a APO epsilon 2, APO epsilon 3, and APO epsilon 4. APO epsilon 4 puts us at a much higher incidence of both Alzheimer's disease and cardiovascular disease. And we get a epsilon from each parent. So we all have two APO epsilons. So you can be a 2-4, a 3-4, a 2-2, a 3-3, a 4-4. And so which of those combinations you are makes a difference in your risk factors for dementia. If you had two epsilon 4s, your risk of being demented by age 60 is 55%.
Mm.
So, you know, when we see somebody with a APO epsilon 4-4, we get really nervous. This is someone we have to be very aggressive at getting. If you're a 3-4, which is the most common, your risk of dementia by your 60s is about 30%. Okay, and a 2-4 drops it a little bit closer to 25%. So still there. If you don't have a 4 at all, you're down around 8% on average.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So having that epsilon 4 is a worrisome genetic sequence. But that's why we check all of our patients at longevity. You know, if you come in and you decide to be a patient, one of the first things we will do will check your APO epsilon status. Because if we intervene aggressively, if we get rid of excess body fat, because fat is one of the biggest risk factors for dementia. So we're going to make you as lean as possible. We're going to control your blood sugars and your insulin resistance, because diabetes is another. You triple your risk of being demented just from being a type 2 diabetic. So we want you lean. We want your blood sugars under good control with very little insulin resistance. We want you physically active, because working muscle produces a compound called brain-derived neurotrophic factors, and this is a protein that actually helps you grow new brain tissue. So minimizes your risk of dementia by growing new neurons as you go.
Mm.
If we put you on good hormonal therapy, change your diet, change your lifestyle, get you active, we can reduce your risk of dementia by up to 80%.
Wow.
So if you were 55% with a 4-4, we can drop that down to about 11%.
Wow.
Now, 11% isn't zero, but I'd rather have 11% than 55%.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. And if sounds like this lady has a single epsilon 4, so she starts with about a 30% chance of dementia.
Okay.
And again, with appropriate hormonal and lifestyle interventions, that can go down to around 5 or 6% risk, which means, you know, you're got a mid-90s chance of not getting demented, which I really like.
Yes.
So your lifestyle, your diet, your supplements can impact your risk of dementia significantly. Now, since your question was specifically, what can you do besides ginkgo? And by the way, ginkgo is not a bad first choice.
Okay, ginkgo, what is it?
Biloba.
Biloba.
Ginkgo biloba. That is a good one, but there are even better things. And two of them, well, actually it's three things, but it's two different patterns. We're actually putting together in a supplement that I'm hoping within the next 2 or 3 months we'll have on the market.
Wonderful.
That that people can use. It's a mixture of citicoline. And citicoline is converted in your body very quickly to acetylcholine, which is the primary neurotransmitters that let your brain cells communicate with each other. And so use of citicoline increases the speed and accuracy of brain function, as well as improving memory for a large number of people, and not just for older people. One of the fascinating studies I found when I was putting together this supplement is they used a citicoline in the same doses that I'm putting in the supplement in 21 and 22-year-old medical students. These were young people that were already smarter than the average bear because they're in medical school.
Yeah.
And they increased the speed and accuracy of their brain function.
Wow.
So, but it also helped people in their 70s and 80s. Okay. So the citicoline is one thing that you can add. And like I said, we're putting it in the new supplement. And then the other thing are two things that are normally used for eyes, not for brain, but it turns out it works equally well for brain function. And that is lutein and zeaxanthin. And zeaxanthin-lutein combination has been shown even in people in their far elderly years, mid-80s, that had minimal cognitive impairment, whereas their brain was slowing down, they were moving towards dementia, reverted their brain function back into the normal range. And people with moderate dementia moved back up to mild dementia. Now, they were still demented, but they went from moderate to mild, which I thought was pretty fabulous. Now, how long they stayed there, I don't know. The study was only a year long, but, you know, that was kind of fascinating.
That's improvement.
But that combination was also tried in school children between 7 and 12 years of age. They picked 100 kids from one school, and one class got the combination of lutein zeaxanthin, and the other class did not. And 100% of the kids who took it improved their functioning and beat the socks off the kids that didn't get it. So anywhere from 7 to 87, you got improvement with the lutein zeaxanthin combination. So what I've done is I put both of them, the citicoline and the lutein zeaxanthin combination, together in one pill that you take twice a day. And since that shows benefit for everybody from 7 to the late 80s, I think there's a real market for it.
Yes. And will we have a name? Do you have a working name for this one, Doctor?
Think Factor.
Think Factor.
We actually have trademarked that. Yeah,
okay. Think Factor.
But Think Factor will not be on the market for a couple, 2, maybe even 3 months.
Okay.
And the holdup isn't manufacturing. I got the stuff made. The holdup has been getting the labels approved by the Trade Commission.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Because we're talking about improving people's memory. And so the feds look at that real close because there's a lot of fraud that goes on in that area. And so, you know, we had to document with the peer-reviewed medical papers each and everything we said about it.
Wow.
So, yes,
okay,
ma'am. You wanted
can
to comment?
I ask one question?
Sure.
Yeah, so what is the hormone treatment that you suggest? I'm 64, postmenopausal, and I've experienced some bouts of postmenopausal bleeding, have gone through a bunch of, you know, tests, and everything's come out benign, and I'm fine now. I haven't had an episode for probably a year or two, but I've been told that I can't get on HRT because of that.
Well,
and I'm curious, what you recommend typically? Is it estrogen or is it something else?
Well, it would be a combination of estrogen, real progesterone, not a synthetic progestogen, and testosterone, all three.
Yeah.
How old are you?
64.
Okay, so you've lost at this point maybe 75% of your estrogen. You're still making some, but your progesterone is on the floor. Progesterone hits close to zero by about age 70. So you're getting very close to no progesterone. Your testosterone is down about 85%. And your estrogen is down about 2/3. Okay.
Yeah.
And your estrogen won't hit the floor till you're about 75 years old. So you got about another 10 years of some. And the reason you're getting this spotting, bleeding intermittently is we call it, stuttering ovaries. Mm. Your ovaries are almost ready to quit. You're still making some things, but your balance is no longer the appropriate balance of a young woman. Your uterus doesn't know what to do with this. 1 month you'll kick out more hormone than the next month.
Wow.
You know, because the ovaries, they're still there. They're still trying to function, but they're getting near the end of their lifespan.
I can do this.
Yeah.
I can do this.
And some months they do better than others.
Okay.
And so you get this intermittent bleeding. And of course, they want to make sure there's not an endometrial cancer there, which is why they look at it very closely, because in postmenopausal women, one of the more common reasons of endometrial bleeding is a cancer, although realistically, it's one woman in 1,000. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So one woman in 1,000 will develop an endometrial cancer as the cause of her bleeding. So it's there and we have to look for it, but it's not usually the issue. Usually it's just those old, tired, stuttering ovaries. All right.
I did have thickening in my endometrium at the time, and it was more than spotting when I had the two episodes, but everything's always come out normal. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what we probably do is start you on the testosterone first.
Yeah.
And we follow you along, because many women, if we give them the testosterone, again, testosterone is only one hydroxyl group different from estrogen. And a large number of women have enough aromatase in their system that if you give them the testosterone, they'll make enough estrogen on their own. And you don't even have to give them extra. Okay.
Okay.
And that,
that's me. That's me, yeah, Dr. Mixon.
And that abolishes virtually all of their symptoms. And lowers the risk of breast cancer dramatically. So in a woman your age, I really like testosterone as my first, and then I'll add progesterone and estrogen as I need it. But the testosterone was your primary hormone when you were young anyway. Most people don't realize 20-year-old girls have 3 times more testosterone than estrogen in their system.
I never knew that.
Yeah, we always think of estrogen as the women's hormone and testosterone as men. And it's true in a sense. A 20-year-old man will have a total testosterone of 1,000 to 1,200 nanograms per deciliter. A 20-year-old woman will have an estrogen of 75 to 80 nanograms per deciliter. So as a testosterone of 75 to 80. But her estrogen is only 25 to 30.
So
she's got an estrogen of 25 to 30 nanograms per deciliter, a testosterone of 75 to 80, and the guy is 1,000 to 1,200. Well, okay. So we men are far more hormonal than you women are. You know, we always accuse women of being hormonal.
Yeah,
no, we're the hormonal ones. All right? The difference is you guys cycle once a month. And you got menstruation as a marker, so we see you cycle.
Okay?
And because the women's cycle changes their desire for sex. And when a woman's desire for sex goes up or down, men notice.
They notice.
The husbands notice, really. You don't want my body? I notice that. Okay. You do want my body? I notice that too. Yeah. And so we notice your hormonal cycle. Mm. We men, even though we have 10 to 12 times more steroid hormones in our bloodstream than you do, we cycle twice a day. You want to know how you can tell a man's cycle? It's real simple, okay? We wake up in the morning urgently needing sex. We cycle at sun up and sun down. So every morning the young man wakes up desperate to get laid. Okay. And then, then his hormone levels will decline a bit during the day so he can work with other men without killing each other. Right? Because we are fiercely competitive, especially about women. And then in the evening, at sundown, when you were trying to get the dishes cleared, you know, and you were standing at the sink and hubby was standing behind you, groping you, wanting sex again. That's that's his second surge. Okay. We surge at sun up and sundown. And so our cycle is very fast. You guys cycle once a month. We cycle twice a day.
They are more hormonal.
Well, that explains a few things in my home.
Yes.
Yes. It does. You know, and then as we age, because ours started out so much higher than yours, ours, by the time we're in our 60s, ours will have dropped from 1,200 to about 200.
Oh.
Okay. But you guys...
My husband is 65 and his hasn't dropped a bit.
Yeah, well, see, at 200, he still has drive, because you had drive when you were 75 or 80, right?
Yeah.
Well, now yours is down around 10 or 15. So his has dropped from 1,200 to 200. Yours is at 10 or 15. There's a mismatch there.
Which means God had the humor when he created the two of us, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, I have a theory about that. Here's my theory on how sex got invented. All right. In the great before, God was bored. He said, you know, the universe is too darn predictable. We've got these stars and they go through lifespans and so do these planets and all. But he said, I got to liven things up. I want to make things a little less predictable. So I'm going to create two radically different creatures. And they are going to be so different. They won't think alike. Their emotions will not match. They don't think alike. They don't feel alike. They won't perceive themselves or the universe around them in remotely similar manners. And then I'm going to fix it so they can't exist without each other. And I'm going to sit back and watch the fun. You know? And so the whole thing, yeah, the whole thing is a joke. And the reason we're not laughing is we are the joke. That's why we don't get it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your input. I'll look for your supplement here in a couple months.
Okay. Take care, my dear.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Carol. All right. We are going to go to a break here, and then we will be back and talk with Roger and Bonnie. If you'd like to get into the call queue, here's our number. It's 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
Right now. Yeah. I'm up here dancing, but I'm just thinking, do I do as good a job as a raisin? Come on, can I be a raisin?
Oh, welcome back.
I got
back wrinkles.
Maybe I'm a raisin. You know.
Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon here. Dr. UMAT is off this week. We're back taking your calls. Here is that number to get through, 206-421-5757. We're headed to another beautiful island, Whidbey Island, with Roger on the line.
Hello, Roger. How are you today, sir?
Hello, doctor. Dr. Mixon, yes, beautiful Whidbey Island. Been here 30 years, working as a caretaker on 60 acres. So,
wow, beautiful. You know what? I'm
a blessed man.
I love this bumper sticker that I've seen on Whidbey. It says, "Keep Whidbey." What is it? Keep Whidbey weird.
Oh, what does that mean, Roger?
Well, there's a lot to be said for that, but that would go into politics, and we know what happens there.
Okay, yes.
Well, you know, Whidbey Island was a place where a lot of old hippies went way back when. So keep Whidbey weird. I love the bumper sticker. Anyway.
Now, the good people, good people. Okay, big picture. Had a cystoscopy last Thursday. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I'm on a catheter now, have been for a while. can't void. So I saw on the screen why, and he wants to do, of course, the TURP. Mm-hmm. Of course, my first question is there anything better than the TURP? But maybe mm-hmm. before that, I need to give you the bigger picture, which is okay. I'm a Gleason 8 now, and I've okay. got the pathology report. Most of it reads 95/50 all the way through to 12 cores. And mm-hmm. so it also now has escaped through the lymph node in the hip.
Okay.
So that's then, from what you said to the man previously on, that sounds like removal, but I'm hoping you'll yes. say, no, there's another way. And also, I'm a man divorced, no kids, so if you want to experiment on someone, it's to say, I'm your man. Oh, and I joined, rejoined longevity first of the year and encouraged my boss to join, and he did.
Wonderful.
Good.
How about that?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Well, the Gleason 8 scares me, obviously, and the metastatic disease, the spread to the the hip node, that really yep. worries me. That's a bad one. What is your PSA right now?
The last time it was like 31, something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so
and it's
so,
down. Of course, it was 36 or so. And of course, testosterone. That's another question. If I can get back on testosterone. And if you want to experiment with me, I'll do it in a heartbeat because I do feel like that raisin you were talking about. I have no energy and yeah. have to make myself work out, of course.
Yes, no, and that's true. And the workouts are far less effective without your anabolic load, too.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, we got a couple of serious problems here, though. I mean, that PSA in the 30s... You know, is worrisome. That says you've got a fair bit of tumor mass, and with that node being positive, the tumor has already spread. And if it's on one node that we can see, there's a high probability that there are smaller little seedings of the tumor in places we can't see yet, just because they're not big enough to find. But statistically, that's what we kind of have to assume, that this cancer has already spread out well beyond your prostate, and we want to limit its growth. And that's why they pulled you off the testosterone.
Yeah.
You know, the testosterone does not cause prostate cancer, but there's a threshold effect. It's really kind of interesting. The threshold theories of prostate cancer just came about over the last, 15 years or so. An androgen-sensitive prostate cancer, that is one that responds to the presence or absence of testosterone, if you totally abolish your testosterone load, you drive it to zero. And that doesn't mean just not giving you any extra. It means giving you something to turn off all of your production, give you essentially castrate levels, as though we had removed your testicles. Androgen-sensitive tumors will slow or even stop their growth, and occasionally will even shrink for a while. And so that's the good part of limiting or removing all the testosterone. The downside is twofold. One, abolishing all of a man's testosterone is hell on his brain and the rest of his body. Depression, fatigue, lethargy, a desire to just not do anything. People start wanting to weep. I've literally had men come to me and said, "Doctor, I've got to have the testosterone. I would rather die than live this way." And in reality, the suicide rate goes way up in men in whom you abolish all their testosterone production, because depression is so profound in so many men. Not in all men. Some guys are really lucky, but a lot of men get profoundly depressed and literally want to die rather than live that way. And in those cases, we got a quandary. What are we going to do? We've already got a tumor that has spread, and we put him back on it. His life is going to feel more worth living, but his tumor is going to grow faster. So it is a real issue. You need to have the prostate completely removed. The hydroablation and so on are not going to be adequate. I would, in fact, do a couple of things. I would probably opt for a robotic total prostatectomy, just because you get less damage to the penile nerves and so on that way. You get the whole prostate out. And then I would follow that up with focal radiation of the metastasis. Have them do really, really aggressive studies looking for any spot of tumor hidden outside of the prostate. We know of one big node. Go after that one. But use focal radiation to hit each and every metastatic spot you can find. And with some of the things like the proton radiation, they can be very precise and do almost no damage to the surrounding tissue. You just hit those foci. And then the question becomes, what can we do to prevent growth of whatever tumor you probably still have out there that we haven't found yet? You know? And there are some therapeutic things that we can try. And some of them are actually over-the-counter nutraceuticals, things such as pomegranate juice. You should be on, 6-8 ounces of pomegranate juice every day. You should be drinking green tea or taking green tea extracts. I'm talking about 5 or 6 cups of green tea per day. But there are actually studies showing that men with prostate cancer, the tumors can actually shrink with enough of the epigallic catechin gallate, the active chemical in the green tea, the EGCG. So green tea is a very potent anti-prostate cancer drug. So, that needs to become your beverage of choice. I want you drinking green tea in the morning, green tea at lunch, green tea in the dinner. If you get thirsty, have a nice cup of green tea.
There you go.
And if you don't want to drink that much green tea, buy good quality green tea bags, rip them open, and sprinkle it on your veggies. It makes a nice crunchy. It goes with your vegetables. You put it in your casseroles. Make sure you're getting the equivalent of at least 5 cups of green tea a day, and your body doesn't know whether you drink it or eat it. Okay, so you can drink it as a tea, or you sprinkle it in your food.
That's both before and after. You got it. Now, the next question is, quickly, the TERP, I saw on the screen that the obstruction was near the sphincter of the bladder.
Yes, it almost always is.
So that TERP, we got to do that first so I can boy. That's the first step. And then
yes,
that's August the 5th. And then after that, or before that, I go to the radiologist. Of course, he's going to say probably the same thing you're saying.
But the TERP is going to be able, when they use the TERP to cut it out, that is going to give them tissue sample. And for what you're talking about, I prefer the TERP over the laser, just because you get tissue to send to the pathologist, and that tells us if there's tumor there too, okay? If you did not have a prostate cancer, then I would be going for a different method, either a laser vaporization or the hydroablation. But given the fact that you've got known prostate cancer and a high PSA, I'd say, your doctor's recommendation of the TERP is the smarter way to go. Now, what you can expect, because with the TERP and that high tumor right up by the valve, you're going to lose that external urinary valve. It's going to be destroyed in the process of the TERP. So you're going to continue to need a catheter for anywhere from 3 to 6 months. Most of the time, the internal valves will take over, and after some period of time, we can get rid of the catheter, and you'll get your bladder control back within a year. And most men, 3 to 6 months, bladder control has returned. But you will have urinary leakage issues until that time. And it's just a problem of the surgery.
It would be helpful there, too, I bet, on the recovery.
Yeah, well, you know, the recovery, once more, we've got a balance. If they get really aggressive with their anti-tumor therapy and they do the radiation of the nodes and so on, then we need to have a long, serious conversation about if or when you want to restart your anabolic hormone. Those will dramatically improve the quality of your life, but they may also shorten it. And, you know, there's a time we have to strike a balance. Risk of this and how much risk of that? And, you know, these are things that free human beings have every right to make their own decision. The doctor should not make these decisions for you. You got to remember, the doctor has medical legal things to worry about. He doesn't want to get sued. And so he will always opt for medical prudence, but that is often at the cost of the quality of your life. I always tell people, my job is to give you the longest, healthiest, robust, joy-filled life I can. It is not to make you so miserable that you pray for an early death. And there is the balance. You know, I don't want to make you so miserable you can't stand it, but I'd also like to make you live a long time. And sometimes those two are mutually exclusive, and we kind of have to strike a balance.
Exactly. Well, I'll tell you what, I really appreciate what you said. I got two real quick questions. When I go under the anesthesia, what's the name that doesn't take me too deep? I don't want to take me too deep.
Well, actually, for a TURP, they're going to probably give you a sedation. What you do is you need to talk to the anesthesiologist, tell him that you'd like to be carried as lightly as possible. Because you're elderly and your brain is fragile,
right.
and you don't want under any circumstances to get hypoxic. There's a lot of choices they can make. Now the surgeon doesn't want you to move, because if you move, you make his work a whole lot tougher. But you don't want to go too deep either, and so you want to be as light as you can be and still be immobile. And you know, one choice that they don't usually do, because it takes a lot more anesthesia time to do the procedure, but they can do this procedure under a spinal or an epidural, in which case you don't go to sleep at all. They just give you a little sedation so you relax and mellow out, and they numb you from the belly button down.
Right. Yeah, I think I'd rather just take the anesthesia. I'm a little leery of the other, but... real quickly, I've been doing rebounding for 10-30 minutes. Now, if I'm rebounding, will that encourage the lymph node to drain or something and drain my cancer, have a lymph node?
No.
Crazy talk, or is that possible?
Not likely. All right. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much,
Dr. Mixon. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. You take care. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you for the call, Roger. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine. Here is that number to get through with your questions today. It's 206-421-5757. We're going to break right here, go to a commercial, and then we will be back, Bonnie, with your question and Jesse with yours, too. Stay right there. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine. We are back for just a bit, and then we will actually take a break at the top of the hour. So we will at least get our next question in before we have to take a break. We got a little bit behind there on commercials, so we'll get back on track. No problem there. All right, and Bonnie from Edmonds. Let's take a call from Bonnie.
Hello, Bonnie.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's gorgeous. Yeah. So anywho, I have a predicament here. I walked to, I live in Edmonds, and I walked down to the post office and back, and I saw somebody running across the street. And I thought, oh, you know, I should be running. I took three steps, pulled either ligament or tendons in the side of my left knee, and I could barely walk home.
Oh.
And it's, yeah, it, you know, and you know, I ride a bike. I do all kinds of things. I work out once in a while at the gym in this nice weather. But I called my primary care physician, and they suggested I take 1,000 milligrams of Tylenol 3 times a day. Plus, and I took it, and I felt very euphoric after about an hour.
All right.
And I thought, yeah, I'm thinking, is that how people get addicted to painkillers?
Well, not to Tylenol. You know, the chemical is acetaminophen. The problem with acetaminophen is it is metabolized and is a little rough on your liver.
Oh.
We'll chat with that when we get back. You hear the music says we got to take another drink.
Yep, we're going to take a little break.
We'll be right back, and we'll talk about Tylenol and what else you can do, okay?
Okay, stay right there, Bonnie. And Jesse, you hang with us too. If you'd like to get in the call queue, here is that number. It's 206-421-5757. We will be right back.